Mr. Speaker.
Order, order.
While the budget debate itself took up just over five of this week's 17 hours in the debating chamber, budget decisions dominated questions to ministers, with the two largest parties locked into their no-win, lose-lose struggle over whether the last 8 long years under National have been better or worse than the previous slightly longer 9 years under Labour. But it was an issue that dominated budget debates back in the day, the imposition of an increased excise tax on tobacco products, that prompted this question on Tuesday for Associate Health Minister Pizzata Samlotu-Inga from New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters.
Minister, why has the government, whilst filling its coffers with over $1,600 million in taxes, launched this further attack on consumers of a legal product, many of whom are poor, a disproportionate number of which are Maori and Pacific Islander?
Mr. Speaker, that member knows that the direct costs of tobacco smoking can be up to $1.9 billion.
Mr. Peters also wanted to know why the government did not simply ban tobacco, while the Associate Minister also faced questions from the ACT member for Epsom, David Seymour, who asked him how far the budget measures were expected to reduce the percentage of adult smokers from the current level of 15%.
The Honourable Pacifier Sam Lottewinger.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have a crystal ball to see what is going to happen 4 years from now. But what I do know is that the rates of smoking have consistently decreased since this government has been in power.
Mr. Seymour tried again.
If the Minister lacks a crystal ball, could he at least be good enough to give the House his best estimate upon which he introduced these policies?
Mr. Lottewinger repeated his claim that smoking rates had declined under National, drawing yet another question from the ACT MP.
Is the House to take it that he actually has no idea what the benefits of his policy will be, even though the costs will be large?
The Honourable Pacifier Sam Lottewinger.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I refute that assertion by the member. In fact, that member voted for these measures last Friday. So I put it to that member that what he voted for was clearly beneficial to New Zealanders. It's going to bring the smoking rates down. And, I suggest he thinks about why we voted the way we did last Friday.
Which, in Mr. Seymour's case, was required by his party's formal agreement to support National on budget measures, as is the Maori Party, which was keen to take a slice of the credit for the government's anti-smoking measures, with this question from one of its two co-leaders, Marama Fox.
As a result of Māori Party lobbying and the introduction of 4 pieces of legislation by the Honourable Dame Tariana Tūria related to tobacco, how much have rates of tobacco consumption reduced since 2006?
The Honourable Pacifier Sam Lottewinger.
Mr. Speaker, the rates of consumption have, in the last 5 years, decreased by 25%.
Next day, Mr. Peters was back with more questions, this time for Mr. Lottewinger's boss.
Mr. Speaker, this question is to the Prime Minister and asks, does he have confidence in the Associate Minister of Health, the Honourable Pacifier Sam Lottewinger? If so, why?
The Prime Minister began his defence of his minister by correcting the New Zealand First Leader's pronunciation of his name.
Inger, not Linger, but anyway, yes, because he's worked hard to improve health outcomes for New Zealanders.
Mr. Peters said that if smoking was as bad as Mr. Key and his Associate Minister claimed it was,
then why doesn't he get some guts and ban it?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I think history has shown that for very addictive substances, banning is an extremely difficult thing to do. In fact, most of the addictive services will tell you that ultimately for someone to want to stop doing something, they themselves have to want to do it. So yes, of course the government is doing the right thing, I think, in terms of, for instance, raising prices. And we know that that has the biggest single effect, about 4 to 5% reduction per year for every 10% increase in price. Mr. Speaker, in the end, 5,000 New Zealanders die every year from smoking-related illnesses, and maybe that member should get some guts and try and help those people.
And Mr. Key revealed a personal reason for backing his government's anti-smoking policies.
We know that the biggest impact it has is on young people. We know that from our data that disproportionately larger groups of Māori and Pacific people smoke, particularly Māori people smoke. And in our view, by taking all of the steps that we are, we're trying desperately hard to encourage people to stop so that they can live a longer life. And I think in the end, coming from someone who saw my mother-in-law die at a very, very young age of smoking. She was 53. She didn't get to see our kids growing up. Personally, I know that when she was 53 and on her deathbed, she would have given everything to have made an earlier decision not to smoke. I think there are a lot of New Zealanders in that category.
The Prime Minister, John Key, on Wednesday, when the subject of addiction was also under discussion in one of the committee rooms, as Rhys Lyon reports.
The Substance Addiction Compulsory Assessment and Treatment Bill sets up a regime for the compulsory treatment of people with severe substance addictions and was the subject of submissions to the Health Committee on Wednesday. The bill allows for addicts to be detained for treatment, something Wellington Community Justice Project representative Emily Butler questioned the effectiveness of.
Although heavily debated, there is a lack of evidence as to whether compulsory treatment is effective in managing addiction. Studies have found mixed results. While some have coined involuntary treatment as an effective way to address addiction, others have reported it as ineffective or of little difference to voluntary treatment. However, from these studies, it was clear that an emphasis should be placed on the individual's circumstances, including internal motivation and the surrounding environment.
Ms. Butler said the bill, in the name of Associate Health Minister Peter Dunn, should include a focus on follow-up support once a patient is released from treatment.
Are they living with people who will not encourage a substance-free life? Are they returning to a high-stress environment, which may trigger reuse? The Honourable Peter Dunn said that this bill is not to be used for those who will not benefit from it. We believe that without taking into account these factors, the bill will capture those who will not benefit from it.
To be detained for treatment, an addicted person would have to first be assessed by an approved specialist. And Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists representative Dr. Tom Fluitt was concerned about a potential work overload for addiction psychiatrists if the bill is passed.
The other little component to this, which we have quietly panicked about, is that the number of addiction psychiatrists in this country is small. We all know each other by first names, and we're down to, I think, less than 10 at the moment. It's untenable in the long run unless we think carefully about the types of people who could do the capacity assessments.
Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists representative Dr. Tom Fluitt, with that submission to the Health Committee on the Substance Addiction Compulsory Assessment and Treatment Bill, which is due to be reported back to the Chamber by September the 9th.
Rhys Lyon, and he'll have more from the committee rooms later, but meantime, back to the debating chamber where Finance Minister Bill English faced questions on Thursday about his spending on the armed forces.
Defence have a long-term funding track, and each year they get roughly a $100 million increase in their baseline. Over 10 years, that's roughly about, that roughly adds up to a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Finance Minister Bill English, and there were also questions for his Prime Minister John Key, who was required to defend his government's policies on the housing shortage, and answering questions from Opposition Leader Andrew Little, who asked for clarification of Mr Key's claim of new houses being built at the rate of 40 a day.
Can he confirm that when he uses his figure of 40 houses a day, that he is talking about building consents, not actual houses completed? Oh, so it must be true.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, the building consent rate that converts to building houses being met is virtually 100%. A little less than that, but it's very high.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
In view of his clarification that he is now talking about 40 consents a day, just how many families are living in those consents?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, the government is building more houses than we've seen for a very long time in Auckland. Four times the rate from when we came into office. But, you know, when you have a piece of paper, like a building consent, it means something. It's a bit like when you have an MOU. I suppose it means something.
And Mr Key kept up his ridicule of the MOU, or Memorandum of Understanding, between Labor and the Greens in his answer to the next question, which was from the Greens co-leader Matiria Touré.
Of the 700-odd homes that have been built in the special housing areas over the last 3 years, how many have people actually living in them, and how many Aucklanders overall have been housed in the special housing areas?
The Right Honourable
Mr Prime Speaker. I have no idea, but the member's happy to live in one with Andrew Little, because I wouldn't want to.
The Prime Minister, John Key. Now back to Rhys Lyon in the committee rooms.
A bill setting up an ocean sanctuary around the Kermitek Islands has run into criticism from several groups representing Māori fishing interests, including Te Uhu Kaimoana, whose chairman, Jamie Tuta, explained their concerns to the local government and environment committee.
We come here with the support of 58 iwi throughout the country. It's our view, and it's our firm view, that the proposed bill has complete disregard to the 1992 settlement that was entered into between Māori and the Crown. This was an agreement which recognised the customary rights of Māori, both commercial and non-commercial. The actions of the Crown, the actions of the government, this proposed bill expropriates those rights that were protected as part of the 1992 settlement.
The Prime Minister, John Key, announced plans for the Ocean Sanctuary when speaking to the United Nations General Assembly in New York last year, at the time taking some of the interested iwi groups by surprise, as outlined by Te Ao Pauri iwi chairman Rick Wetana.
Te Ao Pauri was disappointed with the level of consultation by the Crown prior to the Prime Minister's announcement to the United Nations. The Minister for the Environment informed me a matter of hours before that announcement, and we don't believe that that is or was consultation in any sense of the word. The decision had already been made by the Crown, and we were simply only being informed after the event.
Rick Wetana said better consultation would result in wider support and a better bill.
If we'd been consulted early on, as required by treaty principles, then I might have been here today to deliver a presentation that was based on complete support and not the qualified submission that we have been required to take as a result. In our view, Kermitek Sanctuary does not have to be one thing or the other. It can achieve the protection measures desired by the Crown, as well as respect and recognise the rights and interests of iwi and Māori. Te Ao Pauri urges the committee to do the right thing and recommend that the government resolves outstanding issues and takes account of the views of iwi before proceeding further with the bill.
Te Ao Pauri Chairman Rick Wetana with that submission on the Kermitek Ocean Sanctuary Bill, which is due to be reported back to the Chamber by August the 2nd. Elsewhere in the committee rooms on Thursday, the Primary Production Committee received a petition signed by more than 62,000 people calling for a ban on rodeos in New Zealand. Speaking in support of the petition was SPCA Chief Executive Rick Odom.
There is no benefit to animals in rodeo. In fact, quite the opposite. The only thing animals can look forward to is potential and actual harm, both during the events and in the lead up to those events during training and whatnot. The second is there's no real cultural history, no requirement for rodeos. It doesn't fulfil any particular purpose. In other words, the sole purpose for rodeos in New Zealand is to entertain people. And in order to entertain people, we allow those animals to be abused and to suffer injuries, trauma, and what could be described as psychological stress. The third thing is that many New Zealanders agree with us. There's a petition signed by 62,000 New Zealanders who said rodeo has no further place in this country.
SPCA Chief Executive Rick Odom speaking to the Primary Production Committee. Also during the week, the Health Committee was scheduled to meet on Wednesday for 2 minutes, between 12:40pm and 12:42pm, to consider a petition calling for an investigation into public attitudes towards assisted dying or euthanasia. In the name of former Labour MP Marianne Street and signed by almost 9,000 people, the petition has been before the committee since June last year, and while the committee hasn't yet announced when they'll begin hearing oral submissions on it, it has decided to travel around the country once the submissions process begins. So far, there are more than 4,000 written submissions on the petition, which are available for viewing on Parliament's website, parliament.nz.
That report from Rhys Lyon back in the Chamber, and a raucous reception from National backbenchers to a budget debate speech from their Chief Whip, Tim McIndo, prompted this warning from the Speaker, David Carter.
Order. 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 Before I call the next member, there's a habit developing, particularly on the right-hand side, of people actually thumping the desk. It's a very annoying noise. I'm also the landlord and concerned by the damage then being done to the desk, and I've got to then make a budget bid to a mean Minister of Finance to get the repairs undertaken. Applaud enthusiastically by all means, but we're not going to have the thumping of the furniture.
Finally, a look at the week ahead with the Attorney-General, Christopher Finlayson.
The acting Leader of the House.
When the House resumes on Tuesday, 7 June, the government will look to complete debate on the Appropriation 2016-2017 Estimates Bill and make progress on the Coroner's Amendment Bill and the Natural Health and Supplementary Products Bill and a number of other bills on the order paper. Wednesday, 8 June, will be Members' Day.
Attorney General and acting Leader of the House, Christopher Finlayson. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.